Beware, spoiler phobes, you've united around the storm of spoilers. This week, to the surprise of all three of our hosts, Justice League is a real movie. With a running time just under 2 hours, it's lean, it has a beginning, middle, and end, and it has the heroes of the DCEU uniting. We will separate the show into a calm, non-spoiler section and a storm, spoiler section in case you want to wait for the final verdicts until after you've seen the movie. It's real. It's an actual movie. I know, I was surprised too. Hello and welcome to the Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and if I had to have brunch with a member of the Justice League, I would have brunch with the Elongated Man.
I'm Joanna Robinson, and if I had to have brunch with a member of the Justice League, I will pick the basic bitch answer and say Ezra Miller's Flash.
And I'm Neil Miller, and if I were to have brunch with one member of the Justice League, I would go with Hawk Girl for purposes of both transportation and I'm single. So she's, you know.
So what happens if you order the eggs with Hawk Girl?
Ooh, Hawkward.
But they're chicken eggs, not hawk eggs. Unless you go to a really fancy place and they're like, we have hawk eggs. I would flip the table over and walk out in solidarity with her kind.
Yeah,
she's still human, though. So,
well, I mean, that's a good way to recover by accidentally picking the hawk egg brunch spot for your date with
and
Hawk
Girl. And then you just get to be like so demonstrably woke.
Yeah, super performative.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, Hawk Girl, I'm so sorry. Can we fly out of here and go eat toast on a mountain?
My perfect Sunday. Toast with Hawk Girl on a mountain.
I'm just trying to be respectful of Hawk Girl here, okay?
In case you can't tell, and who could blame you, this is our Justice League episode about the Zack Snyder-directed DCEU team-up movie that will be out in theaters this week. Probably by the time you hear this episode, you probably could get into a Justice League screening. We will be splitting it into calm section and storm section. If you don't listen to our show, that means no spoilers and then spoilers. Time codes, warnings, all those things will be in your show notes. But first, our usual first two segments, Joanna starts with reviews.
Guys, we have a foreign review. This week.
Oh.
How foreign?
From the far, 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 far away land of Canada, we have a review from Terry Fox Day. Terry Fox Day actually sent this review back in October, but something you should know is that I only get reports on our foreign reviews once a month. So this is the first time I saw this from Terry Fox Day in my little foreign reviews report. So here we go. The Light of the Seven Stars. Would that I could give seven-pointed stars for this truly charming and enjoyable ensemble of podcast professionals. The Game of Thrones coverage is deep, so deep I had to sit out the storm until after the show's airing, but the calm was more than enough to keep me laughing all the way through my morning commute. I've been listening to Joanna since my earliest podcast listening days when she did Breaking Bad with David Chen. How great would it be for a David cameo in Storm of Spoilers? I've even gotten my mom hooked on Castle Kings as she has become an even bigger fan of Joanna than I. Thanks, Terry Fox Day's mom. Many thanks to the three of you, and I'll be listening to the off-season tour. Okay, and then I realized for my second review, what I want to do is read this poem we got that I almost forgot about since it came last week. But this is from Travis M., who I don't believe is from far afield, but he did request a Shakespearean reading of this.
So we have to assume he's British.
No, we don't have to assume he's British, but he's like mandating that I go British, I think. So here we go.
Okay.
Ahem. Off-season tour, a poem by Travis M. Whisper to we, O day, the storm prince of the off-season tour. Keep our interest engaged. This show is never, ever a bore. Illumination is found as our talented hosts reveal much and more. Gadget Hackenwrench, Jimmy Stewart, Anna Klumsky in My Girl. Tell us, Joanna, the Storm Queen of the off-season tour. Will Justice League be good or bad? Terrible, for sure. Will Stranger Things 3 be exciting and fresh, adding to its lore? Do androids dream of electric sheep? Do they also snore? Laugh with us, Neil, the Storm Lord of the off-season tour. Scariest horror villains, Rick and Morty, Stephen King, Tremors, and Thor. Halloween in Westeros, Jehovah's Witnesses, Buffy, and water dinosaurs. Will R2-D2 fly? Will The Last Jedi soar? Of course, it's Star Wars. Guide this ship of sweet summer children through the spoiler storm of the off-season tour. Remember fondly, fans, this journey to season 8, for soon Game of Thrones will be nevermore. So, that is the off-season tour.
This is fantastic.
By Travis M., the most amazing piece of poetry I've ever read. Thank you, Travis.
That almost makes it feel like we, like us getting together and just bullshitting about topics every week is like the least amount of work being put into Storm of Spoilers fandom right now. No. We're sorry, guys. We're going to have good insights about Justice League this episode. You guys are amazing. And Dave Chen, guest star to be continued.
Always says, welcome.
Yes. Anytime Dave Chen wants to drop by.
I think Travis is from West Virginia. So.
Oh, that's, I mean.
Mount Mama, thank you for that.
If I had to guess, the Shakespearean poem came from West Virginia.
Yep. Neil, your segment is called We Talked About This Already, where we cover things, occasionally Game of Thrones, or just other things we need to talk about before diving into our main topic. What's up this week?
Yeah, I gotta be honest, don't have a lot this week, because not a lot is going on in the world of Game of Thrones, except for bunch of secret shooting that we don't know much about, except remember, giant trebuchets. It's a big deal. But there is a little bit of Thrones adjacent news this week. One is that there is a London theater that is going to be screening all 7 seasons of Game of Thrones back to back, which really got me thinking as to whether or not I could do that. Like, do you think you could sit through 7 straight? Obviously with like bathroom breaks and stuff, but could you watch 70 hours of Game of Thrones?
Yeah, that's like what, 60? Well, 60, or no, it's 68 like, hours, right?
Yeah, close. It's basically, let's round up. It's 70 hours.
Sure, fine. Fair.
But do you think you could do that all in one shot?
One shot? No, without sleep? I would sleep, you know what? No, it would be perfect because I could just like snooze through season 5.
It is. It's funny that someone on Twitter, when I posted about this, was like, yeah, you'd probably get to season 5 and want to like claw out your eyes.
No, that's where you close your eyes.
Right. You could sleep through all of the unbent, unbowed, unbroken episodes.
Yeah.
No, that was season 6, wasn't it? That episode? Sansa's wedding? You can sleep through that one, too.
That's 5.
That's 5?
This just always reminds me, like, before every, like, Avengers movie, they do those, like, watch all the Marvel movies in, like, one poor theater somewhere in the country. And I always enjoy following the tweets, figuring out, like, who sleeps during what movies.
Oh, I know. Like, follow Matt Singer for, like, him prone in the lobby during, like, I don't know, Thor the Dark World. Yeah.
Funny tie in to this week's topic. Yesterday, before seeing Justice League, I was up very early in the morning, and I was like, you know what? I should just go through and rewatch all of the DC Extended Universe movies. I ended up watching none of them because I was like, you know what? Hard pass.
Life's too short.
I don't even want to know if I own a copy of Suicide Squad, let alone watch it again. So, it probably was the best decision I made all day.
I'd watch Man of Steel again, but that was like, I mean, Wonder Woman again, obviously, but I would watch Man of Steel again, even though I didn't like it when it came out. But like in comparison to what has come since, it seems, you know, it's at least an attractive film. I don't know. Mm.
It's very pretty. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that's my number one thing. If anyone would like to fly me out to London, because at the moment I don't have that kind of cash laying around, I would try it, I think. I would try to watch all seven seasons back to back. I guess this is something I could do in my home, but it would be more fun if someone were like, come on out to London. So if anybody knows anybody that works at that theater and they want to have a celebrity join, it could be me. Cool. So that's that. That's weird part over. Really, shout out to Jason Momoa's Instagram account. Do you guys follow Pride of Gypsies on Instagram?
I don't follow it, but like I occasionally dip into it. He's that man is great. Loving life. He is loving life.
He's living his best life. Also, someone nicknamed him, I think this is someone from the Game of Thrones cast, nicknamed him a walking adventure. And I'm like, that's probably the nicest compliment you could pay to someone. To be like, they're a walking adventure. I would hang out with that person all day. So shout out to Jason Momoa. It's Game of Thrones related in the sense that he keeps showing up in Belfast to pimp out Guinness or whatever. And he's always hanging out with the Game of Thrones people because he was like their favorite coworker who left a year in.
I just clicked over to his account, and at the top of the feed is him with Lisa Bonet and their lovely family with Ani DiFranco. And he says,
yeah,
since 94 sophomore year of high school, I've been listening and following this genius. I'm like, what? Jason Momoa loves Ani DiFranco? This is
there's
the best
so many
ever.
Layers. Jason Momoa is a pop culture onion. Like, oh, he's got goodness. So many layers. And as we're about to talk about, he's a lot of fun as Aquaman. So...
is he?
Shouts. This too shall be answered. Yeah. So shouts to Jason Momoa's Instagram account. That's all I have to say. And we talked about this already. I promise I'll have more next week when I have more prep time.
I feel like I usually, well, actually, your Game of Thrones section, but I have nothing to add. So
yeah, there's like literally nothing going on right now.
Yep, yep.
Well, there's lots of stuff going on. We just won't know about it for over a year.
Right.
Like, you know, like a certain superhero movie that seems like it's been in production for 2 years, but has actually only been in production for 1 year, even though we got the first Aquaman poster in February 2015. You know what, guys? Let's take a quick break, then talk about Justice League. We are here in the calm. That means no spoilers for Justice League. I'm not sure. I mean, I know exactly what that means, but I'm going to, instead of giving my thoughts first, throw it to Joanna to see how far down the plot line she wants to go before we consider a spoiler for Justice League.
Yeah, like how much mustache talk can we have?
Yeah, exactly.
Superman's in the first seconds of the movie, so I feel like mustache talk is on the table. I don't know. Like,
was that too quick? Should I give more like background to what the movie is before we talk about the plot?
I'll do the background on the movie. This movie, the fourth in the DCEU. That's right.
It's
right?
Only the fourh
or fifth? Do we count?
It's so Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman, Suicide Squad, Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I guess
this
we count
five.
Suicide Squad. This is fifth. Number five.
And we just watched the 17th Marvel movie.
the slogan of this Once Upon a Time was Unite the Seven. We'll talk about later why that's wrong. But in this this movie, we see a team up between Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot, The Flash, Ezra Miller, Aquaman, Jason Momoa, Cyborg, Ray Fisher. Did I get that right? Please don't let me get that wrong.
Yeah,
and,
no, you got it right.
Batman by Ben Affleck. Brought to you by Ben Affleck. And then Superman. So this is the formation of the Justice League, which is the DC's answer to the Avengers. Of course, it's something that has existed in the comics for a very long time. The villain in this film, another fun Game of Thrones tie-in, is a CGI creation called Steppenwolf, voiced by Kieran Hines. Did I get that name wrong? I hope not. And,
no, that's right.
That's pronunciation. I've gotten dinged on that one before. So there are some MacGuffins that we're chasing, and when they come together, bad things happen, and our heroes have to stop that. But along the way, they're also grappling with the death of Superman, which actually was handled like, it didn't feel as inconsequential as I was worried it would feel. So the death and the resurrection of Superman, the formation of the Justice League, and the halting of this big evil threat, that is the Justice League. That's what I'm comfortable putting in the com. Does that...
I also have one more. This is not really spoiler because it's in the first act of the movie, Game of Thrones tie-in, because there's a lot of Game of Thrones action in this. But Roose Bolton is in the...
Michael McElhattan wearing a hat-in.
Wearing a hat-in.
Michael McElhattan. That's
and
what I thought when I was
what
watching
I love
that.
About this, what I love about his appearance, first, I thought it was the guy who played Stannis. And I was like, wait, that's not right. Oh, Roose Bolton, right. Second, he plays a terrorist who's trying to blow the Earth back into the Stone Age, which I thought was clever because that's when he was at the height of his power as a Roose Bolton.
Dark Ages, the Dark Ages.
The Dark Ages, sorry, not Stone Age. Stone Age is a little too far back.
It was funny watching like Reddit react to Justice League secret screenings and being like, is this guy a cultist? And I'm like, man, that is so unimportant. But yes, let's debate if he's a cultist or a terrorist.
I mean, you know, of all the things that could be deeply discussed in this movie, let's focus on that, I guess.
I feel like terrorist.
Right, but he says back to the Dark Ages where we could like be cleansed by like a true fear in God or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, he's
like
the
that.
holy fear will govern us or something. So he's basically just a religious nut.
Yeah, don't a lot of terrorists have like regressive religious principles guiding their terrorism?
I mean, I think it's just that Reddit doesn't know the word zealot when it really needs to.
Okay.
Wow, a lot of terrorism talk in this episode already.
All surprising. So Dave, now that I have, I guess, set the rules of the spoiler talk, what do you want to say?
Justice League is a really good tonal shift for where the DC Expanded Universe needs to go. It is very slight in comparison to the heavy thematic overtones that even Suicide Squad attempted to have, which in the end means that it's the most enjoyable DCEU movie. It's the one that I'm probably going to rewatch. Whether or not it's a good movie, I think is a bar that Justice League didn't have to clear for me. I really just didn't want to see that Warner Brothers and DC Comics decided that they knew better than everybody and, you know, damn it, we're going to go and do our fifth movie in this same direction that we are convinced is the right direction. There's definitely a pivot here. The logic of the plot suffers for it. A lot of the action, I think, might have suffered for not being able to be in the settings it wanted to be in or take place in the scope it wanted to take place in, because everything's been limited to Justice League being a standalone movie you could walk into and walk out of and have a good idea of at least what Warner Brothers now wants you to think of these characters, which are much more reactive to Wonder Woman, even though there's a lot of lip service to undoing the darkness of Batman v Superman and how everybody views their actions in that movie. So Justice League is fun. There's a ton of stuff, like little holes that you could stick your finger in and then rip the whole tapestry apart. It's just whether or not you want to do that. Unlike other Zack Snyder movies that seem to invite you to have a harsh opinion about it, either because of deconstructionism or baffling technical decisions. This one, it has some like goodwill to it, which was what was missing from all of these movies. Like even Man of Steel, I was baffled that they took Superman and made him be like, should I save the human race? And then when he decides that he totally does, it's like 10 minutes between that and him killing somebody. I think that dark streak gets bleached out as fast as possible in 2 hours with Justice League, to the point where we don't have to talk about the previous four movies ever again. They existed, their history, but, you know, good riddance. I never have to see Suicide Squad again to understand where these characters are at the end of this movie.
Would you say that Goodwill, thy name is Ezra Miller?
Maybe. There's a lot of...
No, there's all shots of Diana smiling. Like, what I feel like all those smiling shots were part of the reshoots. And so, like, every time there's a close-up and Diana, like, smiles a little, I'm like, I don't know what you're smiling about, per se. But I see that they wanted to add more smiles to this movie. So, like, Ezra Miller is the comic
relief. Oh, look, they're having fun, too.
Ezra Miller is the comic relief, obviously, has, like, a lot of heavy lifting to do. And it doesn't, like... Ezra Miller's comic relief in a vacuum works for me. Ezra Miller as comic relief spackled over this movie doesn't really work well for me, if that makes sense. Like, it's just a tone mismatch entirely, I think. And so, like, you'll have, like, a Joss Whedon zinger or a bit of physical comedy, and then, like, Ben Affleck glowering, but not in a fun way. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's ultimately part of the... What you, Dave makes an excellent point where you could poke your hole in the seam and rip the tapestry apart, because the seams are very much there. Like,
so,
you can
yeah.
really tell what was Zack Snyder's original vision for this movie, mostly because that's the stuff that was in the trailers. And then you can really tell the stuff that Joss Whedon came in and sort of polished up and changed. It's really kind of messy in that way, but I think the sort of the way it all comes together and is sort of hopeful is good. Like, I liked it. I enjoyed that part. And you know what? Dave made an excellent point, as he's wont to do. We were walking out of this movie last night, my housemate Theo, who has guest host of this podcast before, and we were reminiscing about the fact that we, ironically, to torture people in the room, watched Batman versus Superman on his wedding day to, like, mess with all the groomsmen. I'm not sure what the whole point of that joke was, but we decided that Justice League is a movie we would actually, like, put on in the background and maybe enjoy some of, which is a huge step up from where we were with Batman v Superman.
Yes, even if an Ultimate Edition Batman v Superman, it was apparently, like, better.
Slightly more coherent. I don't know if it's better.
I watched
it. Well, I mean, I also watched it, but it's still something. Yes. I revisit that and Suicide Squad through YouTube clips, because there are literally minutes of those movies I enjoy watching, but I can't, like, ever think I would, like, leave it running just because, like, if it were Batman v Superman, I would be having a pleasant conversation and turn around, see Jesse Eisenberg's piss in a jar, and be like, what is this movie about again? And it would just get me mad all over. So
it's,
hopefully...
It's at peach least, tea.
Peach tea. at least Justice League, I felt, like, a sense of relief about halfway through, when I didn't feel like I did during Batman v Superman, and to a certain extent during my rewatch of Suicide Squad, not the first time through, but of just, like, this pain that I had to go through the rest of the movie. Like, once the League gets together, the pace actually picks up and the movie actually gets better. And most of its, like, crazy scenes come right at the beginning and right at the end.
I have an issue. Well, okay, a couple things. I have an issue with the pacing of this film, as any sane person should, because to me it feels very clear that, like, there is an extra hour at least of this film that was cut out, and it's just like,
oh, yeah.
And it's, like, so clearly, like, snip, 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 you know, like, quickest possible exposition, snip, snip, snip. And so then it just, to me, the movie feels like, this happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened. That's what the movie. So, like, when you're like, the pace picked up, I'm like, I feel like the pace, the whole movie is just like, this is happening now. Now this is happening. Now this is happening. Now this is happening. And there wasn't any sort of, like, rhythm or flow to it.
I think what the difference for me, because I agree with both of you, oddly, on this point, is that the beginning of the film, the first, like, 35 minutes of the film, it's quickly paced, but it's disjointed. Like, it's almost hard to follow, similar to a lot of the stuff in Batman versus Superman before the extended cut. There's just a lot of, like, stuff that's sort of happening and explained. Like, there's a sequence where they're in Atlantis and they're like, Amber Heard's character and Aquaman are having this conversation about all this stuff that happened. I'm like, wait, what? Like, who cares? Wait, does this matter? But once the Justice League sort of forms, it's a little cleaner. Like, it's not as disjointed. So it's the same pace. It just feels like this. That's when the movie started. Like, that's when the, like, the good part of the movie started. And it became relatively coherent because it's like, oh, now they're all together and they're just going to go fight the bad guy. And they're, like, doing their team stuff, you know? Like, they all have their little roles. And that part is the part that I liked.
Yeah, I think it's refreshing that... Well, I don't know if it's refreshing or... No, it definitely is refreshing. I don't know if it's good or bad in terms of how you make a movie, but everybody's character arc is just, will they join the Justice League? So, like, by the time the first act is over, you're not really, like, invested so much... And like, is Barry gonna get a job? Like, who cares? There aren't like sub character arcs. It's just, will they join the Justice League or not? And then finally, everybody shows up and everybody's together. And from that point on,
spoiler
even
alert,
not,
they all join the Justice League.
Did they all join the Justice League? And from that point on, even though they're not necessarily all on the same page about what should be done, there's not like a Avengers Age of Ultron, we all have to go back to a house and talk about our feelings before the big battle. They're all dedicated to being in the Justice League. Ooh, I slapped my hand there. It's probably going to make the audio. They're all dedicated, like hand slapping, to being in the Justice League once they're there.
Do you have to slap your hand when you say the phrase hand slapping? That is hilarious. I did hear that hand slap. The other thing I want to say is I think I liked this less than maybe you guys, and that's on brand for everyone. But I think one of our listeners, I don't know, he's a podcast listener. He came up to me at the screening and introduced himself, Paul, very nice person. And he said that...
That's an interesting last name.
Yeah, Paul, very nice person. And he also liked the movie more than I did. And he called it a step in the right direction. And on that, I really agree. Here's what I feel like: it's a step in the right direction. It was too late for it to be the right direction. They were too far into production before they found out what about Wonder Woman everyone liked. And so then they tried to spackle over this Whedon stuff on top of what Snyder had already done. Snyder, we should say, left production. Zack Snyder left production for very tragic reasons. I don't mean to sound disrespectful, but like the tone that has been in these movies has not been working. It's clear that they want to go in a new marvelous direction. And I just feel like we can all agree that this movie is some like freakish cyborg-esque hybrid of both. And that maybe now knowing and feeling more confident that that's the direction they want to go. And like, I'm sure people are going to respond really well to Ezra Miller and other things. So like, okay, we were right. The lighter shit is what they want. Seeing Henry Cavill actually smile at Superman as Superman is what they want. Okay. The next thing, whether it's another Justice League or whatever, is going to be that, you know? And so.
Ooh, I have a good point about this.
Yes. Hit me.
Because you mentioned Marvel-y, which I think a lot of people sort of curdle, you know, DC fans sort of curdle when they hear something described as like more like Marvel. Someone made a good point about this that does not invoke Marvel that I think is good. My friend Jacqueline Coley, who hosts the Rotten Tomato, the very controversial Rotten Tomatoes show, See It, Skip It, this week. But she likened it. We were discussing it last night, and she likened it to the, like, it goes into like Saturday morning Super Friends mode, which is kind of the Justice League that like I would want, that I would love. So it's almost like, it's not even that it's like more like Marvel. It's just more like the Justice League stuff that I grew up with, where there's a lot of silliness to it. And a couple of the characters are funny and Batman's gloomy. And, you know, that's just great.
Yeah, it feels a lot like Justice League Unlimited, the animated series. I don't know if you were into that, but if people who are into that and are looking for more of that tone in the cinematic universe, that's definitely the sort of pivot that they're signaling here. It's going to be interesting to see if they could stick with it. I mean, I will say this in the column section. Batman v Superman had so many dangling threads that were leading to the future things that sort of stunted it. Avengers Age of Ultron had this similar problem, got sort of stunted. Justice League, yeah, we're back to an older Easter egg and dialogue sort of hinting at where things are going to go. There's not any like weird hanging plot threads. They're going to shoot you off. And so you're like at the end of this movie, you're not exact. You're going to have an idea of where they're going to go. But it's not as locked in as we have been since Batman v Superman, with every movie sort of pointing the direction of what the next installment is.
It's almost it's almost like we just watched two consecutive superhero movies in the last 2 weeks where they very sort of smartly discarded a lot of baggage.
Yes. We're in the revisionist meta superhero place now. But like Neil pointed out, it took, you know, one franchise 17 movies to get there and the other franchise 5. But it is interesting how all of the DCEU movies past Man of Steel have been a reaction to what came before. So like Batman v Superman makes a big deal about how many civilians died in the big battle of Metropolis, because that's what critics made a big deal about. Everybody hated BVS's tone. Not everybody, I'm sorry. Critics hated BVS's tone. So then they flew them all out to the Justice League set so that Zack Snyder could be like, no, look, Justice League's going to be different.
It's going to be in color.
And, you know, yep. Then Wonder Woman came out and everyone's like, oh, we like the hope here. And they're like, oh, well, go back and put some more stuff over this. DC movies are so reactive. It'd be interesting, you know, if Marvel was actually like, oh, you want a Black Widow movie? Maybe we'll just rush a Black Widow movie. We don't see that sort of reaction from Marvel. It takes them half a decade to turn around their intentions.
And they get a lot of shit for it, like Marvel does. Not, I mean, less shit than the DCEU does, but Marvel gets shit for like, we told you we wanted Black Widow years ago. And they're like, Marvel's like, but we have a really long range plan. So we don't operate like that. Like, it's kind of amazing that they were able to do what they did with Thor, considering that like Thor Ragnarok is a reaction to Ultron, basically, and like everyone being like, what are you doing with Thor, it sucks, and they're like, okay, we'll just throw out our plan and do something else.
So it's like,
you know?
Marvel is becoming more like DC, just as DC is becoming more like
no.
Marvel.
But like, that's
all hail the mono genre.
But I think you're right that, Dave, to go back to an earlier point, that I think this Justice League, without spoiling anything, did work pretty hard not to lock them into things so that they can go in multiple directions from here. You know, like they're post-credit stingers that we can talk about, but they really are open enough that it doesn't much matter, you know? So.
Right. We could, you know, we know we're getting Aquaman next, but we could just as easily after that go into a Flash movie or a Batman solo movie or a Cyborg movie or something completely different.
Or another Superman movie.
Exactly. But it doesn't feel like it's not the dirt floating off the coffin at the end of Batman v Superman. It's like, you invested in something? Screw you. See you next year. That doesn't exist in this movie, or at least it didn't for me.
Well, and also the dirt floating off the coffin, spoiler alert, has nothing to do with what happens to that character, right?
Nope.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Good. That's a good transition to the storm.
All right, guys, go check out Justice League if you want to, you know, not be spoiled for a whole bunch of Easter egg discussions and probably a couple more nitpicks.
Some deep dives into these post-credit scenes, because I liked them.
I liked them too.
And lots of talks about, you know, how you draw somebody's lip back onto their face coming up after the break. All right, Storm, done. In the storm. In an Aquaman-like aqua storm.
Next time,
in a parademon storm. A mother box storm. The Unity storm. Go ahead, Neil.
For the next Superman movie, they should just let him have a mustache. That's all I'm saying. Like, new rules. I feel like Bill Maher, except without all the racism, this week, where I'm like, new rules for superhero movies. One, if Superman needs to have a mustache, just give him a mustache. It's fine. You don't have to do that whole CGI. Like, how much money was wasted to make that look terrible?
It looks so bad.
It's so bad.
And it's in the first few seconds of the movie. This, like, at least it's cell phone footage, so it's grainy. But I'm like, I can tell that lip's not moving, even though he's smiling. And then it made me like stare a lot at Henry Cavill's teeth, which was an uncomfortable experience. And it was just like, oh.
And I noticed that his teeth like aren't as wide as his, like his mouth is much wider than his teeth. So when he smiles, there's a lot of space. Anyway, second rule, no more video game cutscene villains. Like the best part of this movie.
No more all CGI villains.
The best part of this movie is the final post-credits scene where they bring in two human-ass villains from future movies. And I'm like, oh, thank God. They can fight like humans or human-ish. But like, come on. Kieran Hines, that's...
I think Steppenwolf...
I feel so bad.
Steppenwolf makes... Malekith, the dark elf from Thor the Dark World, look amazing. Because at least Christopher Eccleston was somewhere underneath that. Ditto Lee Pace as Ronan, you know? But like...
Lee Pace as Ronan's a good example of how to do that right.
Well, I still think that that's not ideal. I think what's ideal is, as you say, human-ass villains like Loki or... I liked Jesse Eisenberg's Lex, it seems like he's had some notes, maybe time in prison has changed Lex, but I'm excited for Lex. I think Deathstroke could be maybe interesting. I have no idea. I was fine with what we saw, but like, yeah, it was nice to see a human ass face.
As long as Deathstroke does a striptease in a convenience store at some point, I'm in.
Sold. But Steppenwolf is like maybe one of the worst comic book villains I've ever seen in my entire life. Dave, what are your thoughts on the polygons of Steppenwolf?
Oh, I mean, he has the same physics problem as Cate Blanchett and Thor, but because Cate Blanchett has a real face, you kind of don't notice. This one, much like Superman's face, it's just like while you're looking at him, there's this. We don't even have a touchstone to cross the uncanny valley because it's not like he's appearing on a street corner standing next to a street light. So I know how tall he is. He's appearing in Thymascara. He's appearing underwater and he's appearing in his like final battle place. And every time he does that, he like boom tubes in and out of there. So it's like, we don't even get to see him. He feels like he's not in this movie. He feels like there's another movie that Steppenwolf's in.
I know.
And I think...
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Ben Affleck has that cutaway where he's like, he is really tall. But when he says that, there's no
You can't
not
tell
seeing
how tall
him,
he
like,
is.
Looming over the Nightcrawler or whatever. Like, it's just... It doesn't make any sense. I'm like, what are you reacting to right now? You can't just say things.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like
true.
We need, like a yarn wall for how tall Steppenwolf is in this movie. I do think, though, that this is one of those perfect examples of what we talked about in the last segment of things that they were sort of tied into, be it based on Batman versus Superman, which is like, we have to have this like otherworldly villain. And I think they originally intended it to, was it Dave? This is a production notes question. So pull up your 17,000 word notes file
on
this movie.
Done.
Was the plan to be like Steppenwolf in part one, Darkseid in part two? Was that always the plan or did they kill the Darkseid idea and just pull in Steppenwolf?
Unclear. I think it was a part one, part two plan. The only things that really hitched Darkseid to Justice League were obviously the Omega symbol in the nightmare sequence in Batman v Superman. And then on the Empire Spoilers podcast, Zack Snyder did say that Darkseid existed in his universe and he was out there and he was looking for something that would stop life.
At least I'm not.
We
the
know
one.
Now that's. Sorry. We know now that's hinting at the mother boxes. But
I was going to say that's an Empire podcast shout out from non Joanna sources.
I know it wasn't me this time.
That's. So I think he was always like a part two thing. I am surprised he gets a name drop in this movie,
for Darkseid.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's part of the Snyder's Justice League, not the Whedon Justice League.
What do they call?
Maybe Joss forgot to scrub it out.
What do they call the? Yeah, Joss just forgot. What do they call the name like the thing that he creates? The
Unity?
No, the like
the Parademons.
No, the sorry, that's my fault. The like the land, like what he does to the land, like oh. They called it something.
Oh, like he's they say in the movie that he's making it his home world.
Yeah,
yeah. He like
which, isn't that like
it.
Every villain's thing is like, well, I'm gonna terraform Earth into my own world. Like, just live on Earth, dudes. Like, just get a castle or something. This isn't
okay.
that hard.
I thought they named it something that, like, for a second, I thought they said Dark Side, and I was like, is that the name? Like, have they just retconned it, and that's the name of the place? But if you guys think Dark Side is still coming at some point, then that's fine.
Well, he does. He says, oh, Apocalypse is his home world.
Okay, with a K. Oh,
with a K.
Charming.
And a lips, like Henry Cavill's
lips.
CGI
yeah.
lips.
No, I know, but I know he says for Darkseid. It's just sort
right.
of like, that could be, you know, that could be like, for Scotland!
It's all part of that opening-ish flashback that is so disjointed, chaotic, and insane that it's hard to even recognize that there is a Green Lantern in that flashback.
I missed
and
so
Zeus. Zeus is in that flashback.
I knew to look for Zeus because someone had screen capped it from the trailer, and they're like, to sort of defend the whole like Amazons are wearing skimpier outfits, and they're like, well, Zeus is dressed like a guy from the 300, so equal opportunity skimp. And I'm like, not really, but fuck off. But anyway,
I mean,
so
in the context of the movie, the Amazons looked to me mostly the same as they did in Wonder Woman.
I disagree, but
that's okay.
Like mostly, but then there's shots of them like trying. It's not only the way they're costumed, but it is the way they're costumed. But it's also the way that the camera treats them. And Zack Snyder just has a more leering camera than Patty Jenkins does. And so like when they're
trying. There are a lot of Gal Gadot
ass shots
in this
oh
movie.
My god,
to the point where there was one where she's wearing red pants,
yeah,
where I'm like, that's unnecessary.
There's
like,
one
as much
where they're
as
like where they're, I know, like, you're like, this is for my demographic, but
as
like,
much as I appreciate the female form in all of its glory,
but like
that felt gratuitous.
It's not like we walked out of Wonder Woman, we're like, it's not like we walked out of Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman and we were like, well, Gal Gadot is not an attractive lady. No, we all walked out being like, man, she's super beautiful. But we weren't like, oh, yeah, and that shot where it pans up and her low-cut blouse and blah, blah. Like, that's Wonder Woman treats Gal Gadot, so respectfully, even given, like, how just, like, mind-blowingly beautiful she is. This
and
movie,
how mind-blowingly minimal that costume is.
Yeah, but like there are no upskirt shots in Wonder Woman. There are upskirt shots in Justice League, and like you see cheek, and she's wearing these like tight leather pants, and like there's this one shot where she's standing in the foreground with her ass to the camera, and all the guys are like getting off of something, and I was like, you did not need to frame the shot this way. You did not need to do this.
It's but very that, Batman. What was it? Batman and Robin. Where they show like them getting their suits on, and
no,
it was like junk shots and Alicia Silverstone ass shot.
That's the gay lens, like, because Joel Schumacher is using his like gay camp lens to be like, here's superhero butt cheek, but you don't get the
and
men
bat nipples.
You don't get the men in this movie treated this way. It's only Gal Gadot and stuff like is really bothersome, but. I don't know. That's definitely a Joanna rant that I can't get myself back out of.
Sorry, that was a derail. What were we talking about before we started talking about the Amazons?
Can I talk about some Joss Whedon elements that made me like chuckle and feel pandered to?
Yes.
What? Okay, so we talked before about how we feel like it's really obvious what are Whedon reshoots and what are not. Like the lip is a good. A good metric. And when you have the lip, there are these scenes like Henry Cavill and Amy Adams on the farm in the cornfield. I really quite like that scene a lot. And it's a very character scene. And that's what Joss Whedon does, is he's like, here's character and emotion and humor. That's what I do. Similarly, I believe the scene between Gal Gadot and Ben Affleck where they're sort of like in a side room and she's talking about what losing Steve Trevor taught her and the burden of leading and all this sort of stuff. Like, and like, if you ask people to follow you, you're responsible for them when they die and all of that. That to me, though there's no lip to measure it, I think Gal Gadot's wig helps me identify that as a Whedon reshoot.
I almost felt like that the way you can tell that's a reshoot is that looks like that was a room in the Batcave, like in the original idea, and then.
But they're on a.
It's on a plane, yeah. In the actual movie, but it doesn't look like a plane room.
Plus,
it looks it was in the house.
She also has a cape on, and like I feel like in some of her reshoots, we didn't put like a scarf over her, like plunging neckline, or a cape on her to like make her a little more dress. I could be just giving him way too much credit, but she's wearing like a scarf at one point and a cape at one point. And
well, I
like
that because. You would think that she would get cold eventually, yeah. Right?
But that scene was very Buffy to me. That's a very Buffy the Vampire Slayer thing, is like the burden of leading and asking people to follow you. Alfred was giving me a lot of Giles feelings. Steppenwolf, I don't know how much Whedon had to do with Steppenwolf, but Steppenwolf, in his best moments, was very the master from season one of Buffy, which is just like an over-the-top camp. Terrible mwahaha villain. Like there were moments when I didn't have to look at his face that I could enjoy just like the crazy things that Steppenwolf was saying. Them going to the farmhouse actually did make me think of Age of Ultron. Like Lois Lane's like, let's just get out of here. Let's just get out of here. And it's just like, let's just step out of the action and go to a farmhouse.
Hey, big guy.
Sun's getting real low. As they do in Age of Ultron, so that they can talk about their feelings. And then brunch just basically feels, the whole brunch thing definitely feels like shawarma redux from Avengers. So I don't know.
You know
like,
what? I agree. There's another Joss Whedon-y thing that I felt. And this is less about Joss specifically, but more about the type of person that Joss Whedon is in relation to comics versus the type of person Zack Snyder is in relation to comics. And it is the first post-credit scene.
Yes.
So the first post-credit scene, since all of you have seen it at this point, obviously, is... Just a fun throwaway where it's like the Flash and Superman are going to race and they make up silly stakes, but they're just going to have a race to see who's faster, because that actually is a plot point in the movie where they one of the best parts of the action scenes is when Superman's being like tackled and the Flash is like running and he's going to like go and like maybe trip Superman or something, and Superman like eyeballs him.
Notices him in the Speed Force.
The eyeball, that's my favorite Henry Cavill moment of all of the Superman movies. It's Superman eyeballing the Flash.
And
the Flash
then
being
Ezra
like,
Miller's
shit.
Reaction is like, oh,
yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, shit.
Anyway, so this is my thought on this. So Zack Snyder, for better and for worse, is the kind of person who loves the iconography, the way these comic books look. Like, he likes the pictures more than the words. And I'm not saying that Zack Snyder is dumb. He just loves the iconography. He had that shot of Batman and Batman vs. Superman that is literally the cover of The Dark Knight Returns. The Dark Knight Returns. So he loves getting the iconography right. And that's what's important to him. Joss Whedon is the kind of comic book nerd who doesn't necessarily care so much about the iconography, like the visual sort of tapestry of superheroes, as much as he does the really nerdy parts of loving comic books, like the age-old question of who's faster, the Flash or Superman, because there's nothing in that scene that's visually compelling. It's not pulled straight out of a, you know, Alex Ross painting or anything. It's a fun thing that comic nerds have argued about for many years. And that's the kind of thing that when you put that into the movie, you know that you can feel the love.
Yeah.
Where it's, I think the way that Zack Snyder approaches it a lot of times, I don't feel the
love. Is the second post-credit scene.
Yeah. Well, I don't feel the love and appreciation. I feel that he's trying to mimic what has been done before instead of sort of pulling apart the visuals and just using the characters and caring about the themes. So I think that's emblematic of what works in this movie versus what doesn't work in this movie.
I,
wa-
I want to say one last thing before pivoting to Dave, because I feel like I've been talking too much, but I want to say that, like, and this is a compliment to Zack Snyder. I think Zack Snyder is one of the best music video directors of all time. I think the opening to Watchmen is one of the best things I've ever seen on screen. And then you see it in the Superman is Dead montage, right? Which is basically a music video with all the classic staples of a Zack Snyder music montage. And I'm like, this man can direct the shit out of a music video and a montage. He knows exactly what to do. But when it comes to character, like, he's pretty useless. And that's what Whedon's really good at. So you could, in some universe, combine those two to make the ultimate comic book director. But because people complain about that, you know, at least Whedon's Avengers doesn't have any stylistic flair to it. But it does.
You know what? Low key, I think that people who really like Zack Snyder's previous superhero movies are going to love Justice League and not really connect that that's why. Because they don't care about the disjointedness, apparently, based on my research on the internet. They really like that part of Zack Snyder, and they're going to get the Joss Whedon stuff, and they're going to love it. And it's not going to matter who did it, but they're going to love it, I think.
Yeah. Dave.
Yeah.
Tell us some thoughts you have about things.
I don't get, like, really the difference between a tangerine and an orange. Like, I know there is one, but on the palate, it kind of seems the same. Maybe it's because I'm a smoker.
Oh, can I ask some questions that I have to Dave?
Tangerines are sweeter, but yeah, go for it.
Oh, didn't see that one coming. Terrorism, like, and tangerines.
This is like the egg thing from last week. Just like, Dave, can we just always have random thoughts from Dave? All right.
Good. Well, if you ask really unspecific questions, who knows what comes back?
Yeah, that's my fault. I hear you.
Okay, but I have some questions, and these are production related. I know you've done a lot of research. Actually, the first question is an email from listener Astro, who said, "Will there be a Justice League 2 in the next 4 years?" If you had to make a prediction.
So let's see. If I had to make a prediction, I would say no. The things that needed to happen in order for there to be a Justice League 2 in the next 4 years is this needs to have an amazing opening weekend. It needs to have good enough word of mouth to last it probably until Star Wars, in not having like a huge 78% box office drop off between any of its weeks. If it could, you know, just keep it around the 40s and 50s and have a few legs. Because Justice League 2 would need to be rushed pretty much because Ben Affleck wants out real bad. And if they want to have this team together, they need some sort of evidence that this team has something that other teams don't. Right now, I think the idea is they put a Band-Aid on a whole bunch of movies with this cast. And they definitely have Aquaman and they definitely have Flash. But like the idea that Cyborg's really central to this movie's plot, but we also don't have a Cyborg movie idea, I think means is they're also willing to sacrifice this lineup of the Justice League and, you know, come back in 7 years and just have more people around the Hall of Justice table that
they really recognize, maybe
by reputation.
If they wanted to, like if this does really well and Ben Affleck still doesn't want to come back, they could just move Flashpoint up. And
Flashpoint still doesn't have a director.
And be like Flashpoint minus Ben Affleck.
It's a cool idea to put Flashpoint in as a potential reset button. I just don't think that we have enough time to get it. Since Ben Affleck still says that he isn't sure what his level of involvement with the solo Batman movie is, which is vague as hell, like we can't bet on that being next. I think Ben Affleck's the one that controls when Justice League 2 comes out, because if he wants to be in it, it'll be soon. And if he doesn't, then they'll wait.
I mean, basically, we can get Justice League 2-ish. Because Cyborg and Wonder Woman are in Flashpoint. right?
Right. It could be like a Captain America Civil War type of thing.
I mean, on like a lower, it's like Captain America Winter Soldier, sort of like a lower, but like you have members. Well, here's the thing. It's like I liked Ray Fisher's performance more than I thought I would, just because I thought I would be completely disconnected from Cyborg. I really liked a lot of what Ray Fisher did. But I think that design is a disaster. Like, I know we're going to see a better bodysuit for him because they were, like, building it at the end, like, a more Iron Man-ish complete bodysuit. But he just looks like a nightmare walking around all the time.
It's one of those effects that looks good in still photos, but then doesn't look good in motion.
Yeah, it's bad. It's really bad.
I was surprised that they stuck to it, because of all the trailers and clips that we got, Cyborg seems the most gutted. And I have to assume that's because they decided at some point that he was going to be the key to whatever the Mother Box plot was. It was just easier to have him already know things and have him able to, like, solve things with alien magic. But because of that, we lost a whole bunch of, like, stuff with him. Like, he doesn't put up his helmet hood in, like, the movie, like, that one trailer shot. We don't have any of the him as a football player flashback, which is in a couple of different shots. They even sort of like made me very confused about the dates, even, because in Batman v Superman, we see him on the video sort of like be created through the Mother Box. But then in this movie, he's like right after Superman died, the Mother Box started going crazy, sort of like implying that's when it opened. So I'm not exactly sure.
Also in this movie, Bruce Wayne thinks he's dead, even though we saw him on the video in the other movie being created.
Right.
Bruce Wayne was the one watching that, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Here's another issue I have. I saw Batman v Superman. I swear I did. And I remember what happened, which is that all these characters fight for a while, and at the very end, Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman fight together for like a little while. But the way that Diana and Bruce talk about Clark in this movie, it's as if they were like old long-term friends who really knew who Clark was.
It was
and
a
really
deep betrayal of the heart.
Yeah, and then they were, you know, she's like, oh, it's so, that's so Clark. And I'm like, Diana, you don't know Clark at all. And right. And Bruce is like, oh, Clark was so important. And I was like, you spent the last movie, most of it, being an asshole about this. So, like, it was a really weird retcon of their, like, I mean, I understand, like, we dug coal together. We fought through a war together. But, like, they never got to meet Clark, really. They fought with Superman. So
the extent of Superman's interaction with Wonder Woman in Batman v Superman is he turns to Batman and is like, is she with you?
Is she with, like, you? Yeah, who, exactly.
Who's she? but you know what? They're like, in this movie, they're like, new Superman, who dis? okay, speaking of Superman. Go ahead, sorry.
This is a Game of Thrones thing. Okay, when you kill your main character and then everyone knows they're going to come back in the next episode or movie, that's annoying. But at least the death of Superman, like, has a plot ramification in that it like woke the Mother Boxes and left Earth vulnerable for invasion. Okay. So like that makes sense to me. And then at least when Superman comes back, like, I feel like he was more changed than Jon Snow was. Like when he's being like sort of attacked by his quote unquote friends, they're not really his friends, but whatever, the good guys. I was like, I needed some more of this from Jon Snow, some feral Jon Snow, some wolf brain Jon Snow. That's what I needed. But we got wolf brain Superman for like just a scene. But I thought it was fun.
I think the dynamic between in that whole sequence between Aquaman and Barry Allen and the rest of the people making these decisions, because like it's really fascinating and entertaining, because obviously like Bruce Wayne and Diana are having this argument about like the ethics of bringing someone back from the dead. And Barry Allen is like, what if he comes back wrong?
Yeah.
And then Aquaman is like, he's going to come back wrong. And all the way up to the point where Superman comes back and Aquaman's like, nope, he came back wrong. I was totally right. This is really bad, you guys. That's the kind of stuff from a team dynamic that is very enjoyable about this film.
Yeah. Yeah, and you give Barry a running Pet Sematary joke that's obviously a Joss Whedon joke, and it's like, it's great. But yeah, and I hate Angry Superman, but I loved that Angry Superman because I was like, oh, he has something to be angry about.
Right. Well, and like, he's confused.
Yeah. So the fact that he's
was like, dead.
Henry Cavill looks great when he's like snarling. So I was like, I don't mind this snarling Superman. This is great. Like this is how he should be.
And it then does we not have... hurt that he is the most ripped person ever and does that entire sequence with his shirt off.
He's beautiful. And, and then the eyeball, then the eyeballing of the Flash, which is
the eyeballing
maybe my favorite moment of the whole movie, I think, is eyeballing the Flash. So
this is important to our previous conversation about Justice League, where we tried to predict how long it would be before Superman came back. Did anyone clock it?
I didn't actually clock it.
It felt like halfway to me.
Does the first few seconds count?
No, because I assumed, although looking back on it, I feel like that footage is actually from the scene at the end of the movie. Than it is from some other scene. Like, it looks like he's standing in front of the same building that Diana is standing in front of at the end, where she's like got the criminals tied up. And
shit, Neil.
So, like, yeah. Really observant.
I mean, that would sort of make it a bookend, which would make me feel better about that scene existing because it.
Yeah, so I feel like it's like
weird.
It's like a 3 months later type of thing without the 3 months later title card. Or 3 months earlier.
I like that, and then that also makes me feel better that he comes back and just has his same old suit.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I feel like the Zack Snyder ending of this movie had Superman in a new suit.
Dark Superman.
That seems like you were talking about iconography. See, he wears his old suit seems like a decision that Zack Snyder wouldn't make. I don't know, but, like, that I've been putting, like, little pins in this movie, being like, this doesn't make sense. I don't know where it came from, but it smells like fucking rewrite.
What?
Like, the parademons feed off fear? Why? They're afraid of an alarm, or they're attracted to an alarm?
Why is Batman assaulting a man who's just taking out his trash?
Exactly.
Wait.
All such things.
Wasn't he robbing?
Yeah, he was robbing.
Okay.
But at first, I was like,
but then they have this, like, weird camaraderie afterwards. It's super weird.
Yeah.
That was super weird. Okay.
So it felt so Superman essentially, it's about halfway through the movie. So I don't know who was right, but we get a lot more Superman than I expected, I guess is the point, right? That's pretty much it. That's all I have to say. I actually have other questions because I think Joanna, you made the best Superman point, which is the weight of Superman being dead actually does seem to matter in the film, and that's probably one of its strengths.
Yeah.
Okay. So there are several characters that were cut from this movie, I think. So I need you guys to help me identify this.
Iris West.
Yes. Kiersey Clemons is Iris West. Totally not in the movie.
Yep.
J.K. Simmons might as well have been cut because he's in like 10 seconds of it. Willem Dafoe was apparently going to play an Atlantean.
Oh yeah, cause
he's not in this movie.
Cause he isn't he Aquaman's father.
Is he? Wikipedia, which is always super reliable, has him as nudist Vulko, who is a frequently recurring character. Allegedly, he's a chief scientific advisor of Atlantis.
Oh yeah, I mean, I would believe that there was a much more Atlantis that we didn't see for the better.
Yeah. Oh man.
Sorry.
I hope James Wan makes a better
Dave,
Atlantis than that.
Oh no, you were right. The thing about the Atlantis scene, like, I think there was a larger Amazonian like confrontation in Atlantis. They got pared down to one location fight.
I think it looks so bad, the underwater stuff. I think it looks
Yeah. Bad. It's not
how
great.
How are they going to do a whole Aquaman movie?
Hopefully it's going to be a lot about how he was on land.
All
right. Was Robin Wright in this movie?
No, and they made a big deal. I didn't see her, unless she was in the flashback and I didn't see her, but they made like such a big deal about her coming back for Justice League. I believe
and I feel like she's in the trailer of the Age of Heroes stuff. like she's like leading the Amazons, but then in that whole sequence is actually in the film, I couldn't pick her out. And I was actively looking for her because I was like, I like the Connie Nielsen thing. Obviously, she has like a fairly large role in that in the sequence where the mother box is being stolen from Themyscira. But I didn't see Robin Wright at all. And I was like, I feel like she would be around. I feel like that character would be somewhere near the queen for this whole, you know, massive thing that hasn't happened in 5,000 years. Maybe lighting the eternal flame of the Amazons or something.
Oh, for the mother box scene?
Yeah.
No, she's dead.
Wait, she's dead? Yeah. Oh, she died in Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought she was going to be in the flashback with Zeus, et cetera. So, you know.
Apologies to Wonder Woman. Not remembering what happened in that fucking movie. I'm trying to think of other ones that... Those were the big ones. Like, no Iris West. Although I did like... I liked the Barry Allen-ish...
I loved the Henry Allen, Barry Allen stuff. So
Yeah. Even though it's stuff that I've watched play out over the course of several years on TV at The Flash, like it's the exact same story because there aren't other Barry Allen stories apparently, but it would have been nice to see Kiersey Clemons. It would have you know, it felt like they had to take a bunch of shortcuts and we lost things that could have been interesting, but instead we got Steppenwolf.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think what introducing Iris West is about would be about setting up Flashpoint, and they were like, you know, maybe they just learned their lesson from Ultron, and we're like, we don't have room to like do the heavy lifting and set up a bunch of new stuff. So like, the closest they got was like Barry telling his daddy he has a new job, you know, like, and that felt like a nice bookend. I really did love the Henry and Barry Allen stuff. I really love Billy Crudup in that part, and like him saying, I mean, you're right. I've seen exactly these scenes on the Flash TV show, but him being like, "Look at you go!" Like, it was just really emotional. Whereas all of the Aquaman stuff, like,
was just super confusing. Like, I feel like they're setting up Nicole Kidman's character.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. And then, like, but, like, the Nordic Fisher people, like, why did Ben Affleck go there the first time?
To ask him to be part of the Justice League.
Yeah, but, like, why is that scene in
and
there?
And then put a tracker on his coat. Well, why is that scene in there? Because it's the first thing they shot, and then they showed it to a Comic-Con audience.
Yeah.
Same with the, that's why they couldn't change the Bruce meeting Barry scene, even though it's a great scene. If they wanted to change it, they couldn't change
right.
it because they showed that to everybody.
Yep.
But yeah, and that's why it's so weird. It's like in that scene, you got skinny Ben Affleck with a beard and sharp cheekbones, and then you cut to him shaving on a plane and it's puffy Ben Affleck, and you're like, oh no.
This shaving was just, well, like, poor Ben Affleck, he's like, I'm off the shoot, I can drink again, this is great, I love alcohol, here we go. I'm not casting aspersions on Ben Affleck, I'm not calling him an alcoholic, but the man loves
alcohol. I also, like, love alcohol and so, get bloated, but
that's
I'm not
what
Batman,
any of us
so.
Would do after having to
right,
get cut for a
yeah,
Batman movie.
You're eating like kale salads and whatever, and you're like, I'm done, whiskey all the time, yay.
No more cottage cheese ever, what?
I have to go back? Fuck, my face is all puffy now. But
the moisture has returned to my face.
The shaving scene is just the most hilarious. Let's cover from cutting from one thing to another.
Which, again, takes place in what I assumed was originally part of his house, but is now on
his plane.
Yeah. Which is also on his troop transport plane, which is a different plane, but they have the same room.
Is it the same room? I think one's triangular shaped and one's circular shaped, but they're basically the same room.
None of them look like they belong on a plane.
Walls.
There are no seatbelts in any of these scenes.
And they're going real fast.
Right.
That was another weird thing where they're like, where's this thing? It's in Russia. We can't fly in time. And Cyborg's like, I could take care of it. And I'm like, how?
Yeah.
How is Cyborg going to alter physics?
I thought they were
why even bring
up,
that up?
They were setting up him to like plug into the plane like he does with the crawly thing. Mm-hmm. And like somehow make it faster. But they just did that line and then they're in Russia. Like, they were just like, we don't need to show you this part. Just in your imagination, imagine that Cyborg can make planes go faster.
somehow, like, I don't understand. I can understand that he could hack things, I guess, if it's connected to, like, the internet or cell phones or whatever. But I don't understand how you make things go faster. That seems like not something code does. That seems like something machinery does. But I guess he's also, like, a transformer, against his will transformer, which is another thing that's, like, that feels like a plot convenience edit. The two times that it's used. But does he, like, attach himself to the jets? Does he push? I don't get it.
It's hard
to
say.
That's the sort of thing that's going to drive me crazy about this movie. If it does end up being the basis for how we view these characters going forward, is that there are these tiny little plot holes that I'm just like, what's happening? I don't get it. I don't get why that we're dealing with this plot.
Did Ben Affleck have a new bat suit for this movie?
Yes,
the tactical
assault bat suit.
One at the end, the silvery one.
Well, there's like gray, veiny. Oh, it's not flattering.
Might as well have had nipples on it.
Because it was like there's a first shot of him in it, and like it's in the rain, it's in the water or whatever. So he's like glistening, and I'm like, okay, so it's supposed to be looking like a muscular man. I think they put veins on the last bat suit too, but then there's that one where he's like fallen. Oh, cause, Superman throws him, I guess. And he's fallen. He's crumpled on the ground and his bat suit just looks kind of saggy on him. And it looks.
Oh no, that's the original one. That's just the bullshit bat suit.
It looks terrible. Why is it so bad?
Well, it's so bad because the physics of him is that he's now Gumby and he no longer physics don't apply to the way he jumps onto things.
Okay. It's rare to see, like bulk muscle and bulk fat be so, interchangeable in a Batman suit where, like, I know most Batmans can't turn their heads and, you know, they made this suit so Ben Affleck could turn his head. When he turns his head, the neck expands so it gets wider than his jaw and he looks like an idiot. Like, I don't understand how somebody, like in the Zack Snyder movie designed world where look is anything, that they still shoot the bat suit like that.
It's no wonder. Ben Affleck's ready to just move on. We're in the part of this show where we make fun of Justice League, can we talk about the worst scene in the entire movie, which is when Martha Kent, yes, Superman's mom, comes to visit her not exactly daughter-in-law at work. That is the most painful scene that I've seen in the entire DC Extended Universe for two reasons. One, because poor Diane Lane is just phoning that shit in. And Amy Adams, I've never seen Amy Adams so just perturbed with having to be anywhere, let alone in a movie. She seems so mad. And I feel like I can't tell if they added that scene or if that scene was one that they sort of just cut weirdly to make the whole Lois Lane gave up on real journalism and then is going to write the story of the Justice League at the end thing storyline. But that is such a painful scene. They really didn't want to be there that day.
Kitten grooming? I don't think the Daily Planet covers kitten grooming Lois Lane. But also, I think what's worse than that scene is her voiceover at the end.
Which
just made me think of, like, I guess she had one in, did she have one in Man of Steel or Batman v Superman?
Doesn't she have one in all of them? Isn't it just like Lois Lane
the
writes a story and how we end?
It would have worked if she had like quit her job. Like this whole storyline could have, this whole bad part of the storyline could have been avoided if, and there's like the scene where she tells Superman like, oh, you would have been disappointed in me because I like gave up, which almost felt like her telling him that she's been like sleeping around, but while he was dead.
I didn't get that read.
He's like, you would have been so disappointed in me. I wasn't strong. And I was like, this is a very interesting conversation to have with someone who just came back from the dead. But no, it's all about her like feeling guilty that she wasn't like, the journalistic powerhouse that Lois Lane is. But why did she stay at the paper? Why didn't she just like quit? Like, that would have been an easy way to explain away, like, she gave up on hope, essentially, when Superman died.
I will say one thing that's very clever about the trailers is, like, you know, there's that scene of Clark and Lois in the cornfield, And the trailer very cleverly made it look like a dream sequence. And it's not.
Right.
You know? I was like, good job, trailer. Like, I mean, back on their bullshit of like, is Superman going to come back or whatever. But I was like, that's one way to do it. They cut a scene they did use in the movie of her like waking up and he's not there and she's upset, to make it seem like a dream. So I thought that was pretty cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
Manipulative marketing, but I'm not bothered by it.
It's weird to me how, the Lois Lane and Martha stuff are the only evidence that the world exists outside of the single Russian family that we get to follow around for three or four scenes, which kind of makes me feel like it would be possible to rediscover the Zack Snyder version by like building out from that opening sequence. So like we probably got like a ton more of where Barry's life was at and the people involved with him and et cetera, et cetera. And then at some point that all got pared down and streamlined so that the only person whose arc, quote unquote, we had to follow was Superman, to the point that like Cyborg has like everybody he knows abducted by Steppenwolf and then they just get freed and we don't talk about it again. It's like everything that wasn't part of the Justice League got completely stripped away. And the result sort of feels, I mean, I think that contributes to it feeling like a cartoon because you don't have any like Roland Emmerich shots of like people being terrified, as, you know, nameless CG rolls towards them. I mean, I guess you do have those shots, but they're in the back of a truck, but it's not as much as world building as it feels like was once there, like Batman v Superman has. Like there's a really quick exchange about how this battle they're going to take place in takes place in a tunnel which connects Gotham City and Metropolis, and they abandon that project and something. And I keep thinking like Zack Snyder wanted us to know the history of these two towns being in conflict with each other, and that just all gets swept under the rug for a Cyborg being like, I recognize that map.
Well, yeah, and
off
you
go. Do-do-do-do.
You can tell that Zack Snyder wanted that because of the way Man of Steel ends and Batman vs. Superman begins. Like, the whole crux of Batman being pissed at Superman is they destroy a shitload of the city. And Batman's like, obviously this is a bad idea. So, like, there's a version of this universe that sort of deconstructs the roles of Superman and Batman. But it also is the version of this where, like, Superman is either an idiot or kind of a bad guy. So I'm kind of glad that we didn't get that.
Right. Well, I mean, they do have that. He does stop fighting Steppenwolf to save civilians, which I feel is the...
like, that's a very Superman thing, like a real legit Superman thing to do.
Right. I think that... that also reads to me as something that was added because I feel like the conclusion of this movie at the end of Batman v Superman needed to be bigger than they made Steppenwolf feel fear. To me, that conclusion's completely new. And it probably has something to do with Darkseid. It might have something to do with like a dark Superman that lasted longer than just Lois having to sit with him on the farm. But I keep feeling like there's like some momentous thing that they were building towards that they didn't quite get to. And instead, we're like, no, let's reground. We're going to have Cyborg make a toes joke. We're going to have Superman save some civilians. Everyone's going to smile. We're going to use the John Williams theme. And we're just going to get out before people like question it.
You know what else it felt like? This goes back to the discussion of like comic book appreciator versus comic book versus like iconography person. That felt to me like a director, Joss Whedon, like remembering, oh, these characters aren't murderers. Like, they don't kill people on screen. And it's like by them figuring out a way to basically take out Steppenwolf without like Superman ripping out his heart in front of everyone, is a very like sort of loving way to be like, oh, right, the Justice League is very good. They stop bad guys, but they're not going to just murder this guy who they clearly defeated.
It's one of my favorite Disney things. The thing that Disney does is like oftentimes when a villain dies, it's because like something they did.
Right. If their creation turns on them.
Or like they fall off a roof, or they like, you know, in Tarzan, I remember like he hangs to death and you see it in shadow, but I like none of the good guys like hang him, you know? And so like,
right. It's the classic Batman saving the Joker from the falling building.
Yeah, but
or
like,
or not if, saving the Joker from the falling building.
Or like trying to save it, you know. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, Dave, knowing that, do you feel like the whole Russian family thing was all Whedon? Like Whedon's like, okay, we're gonna put a family in, we're gonna care about the civilians, and then we're gonna have Barry and Clark save the civilians. Like,
yes.
Oh wow.
I don't think the conclusion took place in Russia. There's nothing about this movie that makes me think that an abandoned nuclear power plant silo, a la X-Men Origins Wolverine, was part of their original plan. There's no reason for it to be there. He chooses it randomly. He chooses it because it's quote-unquote off the grid.
Yeah.
But like, once you start shooting tentacles of stuff into the air, it's not off the grid anymore. Like, it just as easily could have been an underground cavern or magically shielded place, of which we know there are in this earth because Thymascara exists and Atlantis exists. So I think that was completely added.
Fascinating.
I mean, it's interesting to me that...
That's a very Joss move, too. Like, in Avengers, right, we, like, meet that... the waitress scene was cut. I always think it's still there. But, like... you know, yeah, that like you've got these human stories in the like big battle for New York thing that you are supposed to.
Yeah, like
about,
the people that he saves, that Captain America saves in the bank, that are then you see them later in the credit sequence talking about how like Captain America saved us. He's our hero.
Yeah,
it also did feel like a very late decision and probably reactionary to what Dave was talking about earlier, where there's no world outside of like what the Avengers are doing at this, or what the Justice League, sorry. Yeah. I'm going to slap my own hand. So there's no like world. So it's almost like they went back at the end and they're like, well, shit, we stripped out all that stuff. We have to add something that makes you believe that real people are in danger, because otherwise it's right. Just superheroes versus monsters in a, you know, abandoned, in basically a Chernobyl.
Well, I think it could have also been a location switch because the color grade and the tentacles, which, you know, Joanna made fun of me for getting excited by. But, like, we've been seeing the...
not everything needs tentacles, is all I'm saying.
We've been seeing the Batmobile, you know, fighting parademon sequence since the first trailer, but it was always in a blue nighttime city. This is not. This is in a daytime... red dome that has been changed to this abandoned nuclear power plant city. I don't know if it's the same city. It was just a nondescript city before. Everything that's been changed about it is just color grading. They have the same warehouses everywhere in the DC universe.
Bullshit, though, to be like, oh, they're inside of this weird dome. That's why.
Yep.
That's why Zack Snyder's movies have all these weird color grading issues.
Oh man, we can't make it blue and gray anymore. Well, we shot it like this, so what are we gonna do? Okay, we make it red and black. Well, I mean, that's, is that better than blue and gray? It will be if we make it part of the story. Good job, Joss. Here's a paycheck.
Oh my god, I was glad of the color correction. You're right, Dave. You were right all along. I should never doubt you ever. Here's the thing, Barry Allen's super smart, right? Like super smart. Like really smart, mm-hmm. Like a little bit. He's on the spectrum
traditionally,
but like he's smart. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck that Dostoevsky joke.
Like, yeah, that it. There are moments in the movie where they play Barry dumber than you would think for a Barry Allen, but it's charming enough to they get away with it. I think.
Ezra Miller's great. This is literally my only complaint. Which, well, A, that his character sometimes feels like he's in a different movie, but B, that Dostoevsky. Thing. Stupid.
It is funny that joke was so bad that I spent the next like minute watching the movie trying to figure out what the real Russian word for like goodbye.
До свидания.
And I finally was like, oh, до свидания. I was like, close, but that's a weird thing to do. it was very distracting, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. There are characters for which that joke works, but I don't think Barry Allen's one of them, so sorry.
All right. In the interest of being the Batman of this Justice League, I'm going to call for final thoughts
because we're
approaching time. Neil, Justice League, spoiler, final thoughts. Go for it.
It is a movie that I will watch again and find joy in, which makes it leagues better than Batman v Superman. I think, you know, it's one of those movies, it's very messy. You can see the seams, as we've detailed. You can see the influences of the two different directors. I will say, in the place that it ends, if Warner Brothers walks away from this movie with anything, it's that they stuck the landing on this movie, and that's the tone and tenor of what they should do going forward. They should not in any way regress to what we've seen previously. So I'm talking everything. Suicide Squad 2, the next Wonder Woman movie. Like, they need to inject hope into their universe, and they will be fine. Like, this movie is probably going to be the most successful of their movies so far, if I had to predict. I hope that's the lesson they learn. Oh, yeah, for sure. People are very excited about this movie, despite the fact that
that's interesting,
there's been a lot of train wrecks.
Anecdotally, I've heard from a lot of people who are just not going to see it.
Oh.
I'd be curious. I think it comes in under Batman v Superman, which made just a bananas amount of money because so many people felt burn on Batman v Superman. But warring with that is the like hope of Wonder Woman and wanting to see more Wonder Woman.
I also did see that the Rotten Tomatoes score leaked already.
And it's not leaked. I think it was unveiled where it was supposed to be unveiled, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, or it was a little early. But okay. Anyway, it's going to be it's sub 50. Yeah.
It's 48, I think.
So I feel like DC fans are going to, that'll embolden them to go vote with their dollars a little more.
I want this movie. I'm sorry. I'm going to step in because that's the exact point I wanted to step in for. I want people to flood the DC fans. I like Justice League. Don't be them. Let's take back our Wonder Woman and our Batman and our Superman from the gross Batman v Superman
trash heap.
I think this movie is a great pivot movie that is more on our side as wanting to see these characters be hopeful heroes that are more like their base archetype character, not like a specific comic book arc. And if they want to lean into that, I think Warner Brothers is finally on board, and now they've got me back on board after spending over a year just drilling into Batman v Superman, so I could let them know and let everybody that knew me know that that's the complete opposite way I want my heroes dealt with. I think they listened just enough to steer into a whole bunch of crosswinds and somehow, like Neil said, land the plane. Sorry, Joanna. I just had to try to reclaim the fandom.
Never apologize. I always feel like we talk more than you do, and I want to hear more from you. If I had to predict where it comes in box office wise, I put it under Wonder Woman and Batman v Superman, but above Suicide Squad. So.
That's a $5 million margin. That's very specific.
Fair margin, yeah.
I think if I had to predict, I think it probably comes in under Wonder Woman, but I think it beats Batman v Superman. And I think Warner Brothers...
Batman v Superman beat Wonder Woman.
Wait, it did?
No.
I thought Wonder Woman was the high.
Globally, it did.
No, Wonder Woman is the high.
Oh, globally.
I think
it's going to beat Batman v Superman either way. And I think Warner Brothers will take that as a win. I just want them to learn the right lesson.
I was just reading these numbers off on Little Gold Men this morning, so I was like, it's not a $5 million margin for globally, which matters, okay? Because like the iconography that you're talking about is a big appeal for these characters globally. So globally, Batman v Superman was 873 million. Wonder Woman was 821 million. Suicide Squad was 745 million. And Man of Steel was 668 million. So I put it under Wonder Woman just because I don't think it has the rewatchability of Wonder Woman. But above Suicide Squad and under,
I think,
and under Batman v Superman, just because people were so burned on Batman v Superman.
I think the runtime alone sets this up to be their billion-dollar movie.
All right.
Two hours. Just the sheer math of being able to show it more in theaters is like, people were very weird about that whole, like, when Warner Brothers said it had to be 2 hours and they put pressure on the filmmakers to get it there. But that's actually a very smart financial move. And I may be wrong, but I think if it is their first billion-dollar movie in this universe, that's pretty much why. Also, it's not as bad as the other movies.
To be the devil's advocate on Neil's side, I think I don't know jack about international audiences outside of seeing numbers come in, but I'm going to guess that they're going to have a lot more fun with Cyborg, Flash, and Aquaman than they did with Batman and Superman glowering at each other. I'm going to guess, but we'll see if international mileage varies on those characters.
Yeah, at my screening, which was 80% like general public, they clapped every time Superman did literally anything. So, you know, I don't know.
People are pumped. Yeah. You know, it's, I feel like seeing Superman be the Boy Scout Superman at the end is enough to make
I believe in truth.
Make it
and
work.
Justice.
And punches.
Punching.
Well, I'm super happy this wasn't the train wreck that I feared it would be, that we'd have to drag its corpse through the street squares and pretend not to be happy about it. It is a movie that exists, and you could have lots of opinions about it, and it's a curio about production. I like it a lot, but if you're looking for a real debate, Neil, what are we doing next week?
Oh, we're doing a Great Debates next week.
Yeah.
We're back for our second Great Debate. And since we've been on this superhero kick with Thor, Ragnarok, and now Justice League, we are going to debate two divisions. This is going to end up with like 12 polls on Twitter, by the way. So the great debate, we're going for the greatest superhero performances. And so we're not just talking about the characters. We're talking about the, you know, if you wanted to nominate Batman, you would have to pick your favorite Batman. So who has given the greatest performance in superhero movies? And we are going to be breaking it down into hero and villains divisions, mostly so that Heath Ledger's Joker doesn't win everything. But we'll see. Yeah, we're going to take, we will bring ours. Remember, you can email us yours, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. Give us a single paragraph, something that we can read on the air that won't turn into a dramatic reading of a very long poem, because we don't have time for that every week.
And I'm going to say be loose with performances, because I want one of my well-thought-out debaters to like pick Kevin Conroy in the Arkham Asylum games or
yes,
something.
Yes, and we've decided that this is not limited to movies. This can be television characters and, I suppose, animated films and also radio dramas, right, Dave?
If you guys want to go back and tell me why the Shadow radio drama was actually the best hero, I am so open to that argument, you have no idea.
So, greatest superhero performances, hero and villain divisions, that is next week's great debate, and it should be quite a lot of fun.
All right. So, guys, until next time, where can we find more of your work? Online. Let's keep it rolling with Neil. Keep going, Neil.
You can get me over at filmschoolrejects.com, where I write stuff. I'm formulating an article about great superhero movies versus not so great superhero movies, and I previewed some of those ideas here on this episode. So there will eventually be an article. You can also follow me on Twitter @rejects. And if you want to hear more podcasting, I was on One Perfect Pod last week talking about Thor Ragnarok.
And Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on VanityFair.com. You can follow me on Twitter @JoeWroteThis. You can hear me talking more about Justice League, oh joy, on Little Gold Men. And that's it.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter @DA7E. You could find my writings at Thrillist.com, which will include a what went missing from Justice League, if I could figure that out. I'm going to try my best. And you can find my other podcast at fightinginthewarroom.com, as well as back episodes of this podcast. So until next week, really get into your corner for your heroes and watch your mother boxes. Don't block the mother box.